Work session meeting to order. We have a quorum of our city council members. This afternoon's work session is 100% about renewable energy. And I believe we have a staff presentation to go over, so I'm looking over to the staff.
We have a brief presentation put together, yes.
And then do we have members of the Water and Light Advisory Board? Are they planning on speaking, or are they here for?
Yes, they're here. Three anyway. It was a posted meeting for the Water and Light Advisory Board. I don't know if that makes any difference if they have a quorum or not.
That's Earl says no, so we're going.
It doesn't make any difference.
Okay, great. All right. Well, do you want to go ahead, or yep. DeCarlin, do you have anything to say before you, Dave? Okay.
All right. Well, good afternoon, David Sorrell, Director of Utilities. So as you're aware, you've asked the Water and Light Advisory Board to make recommendations on potential changes to the renewable energy ordinance. And so really what the purpose of this meeting for the staff is, you've got their recommendations. We have drafted some revisions to the ordinance that are pretty straightforward and easy to come up with based on their recommendations. We'll go through those. Some of the recommendations are a little more challenging, and so what we need is guidance from the council as to what you would like us to do and bring back for possible revisions to the code. So with that, I'll get started. What the first three or four slides here are our current ordinances regarding the renewable energy standard. I'm not going to go through and read all this to you, but we'll talk about the changes that the board has recommended that we make. And my slides are a little different than what I had put in. So the first one was that they recommended that we change our ordinance so that our reporting coincides with the fiscal year instead of the calendar year. As it is right now, when we do that renewable energy plan that has to be prepared in January, it's based on calendar year, and we don't have all the data until like March. So we can get a draft done in January, but then we can't have a final plan until March or April. If we change the reporting requirement to coincide with fiscal year, then we'll be reporting at the end of September. Then we should have all the final data so that we can have a plan prepared by the end of January. That seems to me to be a fairly straightforward change. And so basically we've modified the ordinance to change it to a September 30 date at the end of each year.
And do you have a question?
Do you want us to address that? Like that sounds like a good idea to me. If the rest of the council feels that way, can we say bring that back and then we're
that would be wonderful if you say that's a good idea to you and bring it back, and then we can take notes and we'll know that one is something you'd like to do
as well.
Hold on a second, just really quick. For logistics of tonight or this afternoon, do you want us to go through piece by piece, or because I just before we started to jump in with redlining? So we'll kind of come to the consensus on all of these as we go through. But do you have, you said you had a brief presentation. That's just basically on the overall pieces to it.
It's just the overall parts of the ordinance that may be changed and some things we need to consider and then what we need feedback on, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so you want to do it all as one group at the
end? I have not seen the presentation, so I didn't know how this was coming out to us. So part of me is like asking if you're asking and then stopping after each one, or if your plan is to
that.
Go through it all.
We okay. can do that. That'd
have
be
you
fine.
Finished on this one?
On changing dates, yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right, Nick, you had a question.
I can guess, but what's the reason for striking those first three items there?
They've already passed and they've been achieved.
I understand that, I wonder if about leaving them just so we have some markers for where we've been in the ordinance itself.
Or we could leave them and leave the old dates.
Correct.
That's what I mean.
We can do that.
Yeah. I think it's good for historical purposes.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Also on this slide, and this actually jumps up to their recommendation in item 3, and it's actually on page 2 of their recommendations, was to establish an incremental renewable energy goal for 2035 of 40%. I have put that on there. That will be discussed in more detail later, so we won't ask you to authorize that at this point. But the date change is what we were getting at.
Okay. And then my only other comment on the date changes is that the September 30th, 2023 is also a date that has passed, as well as the December 22. So I feel like we should retain the December 22 because you did just turn in the 23 renewable energy report that was based on this ordinance.
24 report was turned in, yes. Okay.
But it's on that calendar, year 23. So. Yep.
So just change item 5, basically.
Right.
Fair enough. One of the things we need to remember and consider, and it's as the Water and Light Advisory Board point out, is that based on our TEA, the Energy Authority's renewable energy study from 2023, the earliest possible year to achieve 100% renewable energy would be 2043, based on existing contracts and life of plant.
So this was one of the ones where this was from last November's work session, and they had the multiple scenarios for us to do. And can you recall, because there were a few that had the 100%, do you have some additional information? And I'm trying to pull up the report that came to us really quick because it wasn't. Was it because of this statement was because in their case, their achievement of 100% was using RECs and the ordinance does not allow RECs?
Well, the ordinance doesn't say whether RECs are allowed or not. The Water and Light Advisory Board's recommended that we do not allow RECs. And so that's one thing we need to have some guidance on is do we want to put that in the code that we don't allow RECs or do we want to use that as an alternative?
Could we define RECs?
Renewable energy credits. Do you want to say what renewable energy credits are?
Best as I understand it, you can actually go to the market and you buy credits for renewable energy where people maybe don't have a PPA with an off-taker or something, and they sell the energy on the market, but then they sell a credit for that renewably generated energy, and we can buy those. And we have done that in the past to achieve some of these goals.
Okay, so the recommendation is not to do that anymore.
That's what the board has recommended.
No questions on this one. We have not talked about the second one yet. We're still in the first part. I feel like when I looked at the year 2043, that there were other options for meeting it earlier because of some of the projects we know are potentially in the pipeline. I imagine some of those things, since TEA did their report, some of the ones happening in the Midwest, like in Iowa, some of the projects that are coming forward potentially could come on before that. So I guess my...
It could be. I think that some of that we need to take into consideration is that we have contracts that we're obligated under right now to purchase energy. And those contracts with those plants, currently with the way they operate, if they operated 24/7, 365 days a year, those three coal contracts would provide 100% of the energy we need. But with their outages and maintenance, they are currently over the last 5 years, they've produced anywhere from 70 to 83% of our energy. So if we enter into contracts that obligate us to buy energy that we don't need, then we would be under a financial risk to have to sell that in the market and maybe take a loss, maybe come even, and maybe even actually come out ahead. But other communities have done that and have had bad financial impacts. It's just something we need to be aware of. But, you know, as like Sykeston is probably going to retire their facility sometime in the next 5 to 10 years, well, it would make perfectly great sense for us to replace that 66 megawatts with renewable energy.
And can I ask how... Is that the sort of thing that then we would put into this ordinance, that when that exact one, or is it that this ordinance would guide that financial decision or contract decision?
Well, and that's part of what's so difficult on the 3% rate cap and our risk studies and such as that, is how do we address that, and is it in the code, or is it become a policy resolution or just a policy guideline that the council provides us?
Yeah. Lisa, did you have a question?
I just had a question for David to get deep in my understanding. When you talk about the contracts, is it similar to like an options contract that they'd be stuck with?
We have contracts with three different to get energy from three different coal facilities.
Right.
And that term of the contract's for the life of the plant, and we're obligated to buy the energy whether we take it or not.
Understood.
So if we don't, if we buy more energy than we need, we can't just tell them to curtail.
Right.
We still have to buy the energy from them.
And so when looking at both the TEA report and then also, I think, like the Siemens report, you mentioned that some communities have had a negative financial impact when they went to sell the excess energy. It seems like in those reports it says that's not always a given. Sometimes it is for our benefit.
It could be either way, yeah. Tom Jensen is the one, and he's not here this afternoon. I noticed it's on the board that has brought that to our attention on more than one occasion. He has some fairly decent details on some of that.
Because I imagine it'd be the sort of thing that if you have the ability to, like you said, not necessarily rely on the 3% rate cap, but more of the investigate on the actual impact, fiscal impact, social impact, of those as they come up, that's a better kind of policy to practice.
And you know, we could do that. And as we do an RFP for renewable energy, do an analysis of the life of the facility or life of our contract, what are our risks and what rate increase might or might not be necessary in order to enter into that. And that's what we need guidance on.
Yeah. And that's a future slide, I assume.
Yeah.
Okay. Don, did you have a question?
Well, it kind of goes along with
that
in the proposal about city should reconsider the current 3% cap. Am I reading that correctly and going through the rest of it, that we should look at removing the 3% cap and then basically evaluating it each one? And like you said, if we're going to get to it later, then
I believe that's yes, and that will come up a little later.
Oh.
And then there's
until we get to it.
Okay. And then there's one other thing here that the board's brought up, and I think it's worth consideration. Should we have some provision in this ordinance that talks about things that are beyond our control? And so the example that I'm going to use here is Iron Star, the Grain Belt project. We entered into a contract to receive renewable energy from that project. It was supposed to be delivered, I think, starting in 2021 or 2022. And as we all know, that project's been significantly delayed. And now the projections are 28 or 29, it might be online. So we have the contract that says we would meet the goals of the ordinance, but we aren't actually getting the energy delivered. So does that mean that we have to go get another contract, which is that much more energy that we wouldn't need in the future? Or do we say, since the contract's in place, Maybe I'm getting at, should this say that instead of percent of retail electric usage, it'd be percent of retail electric usage or contracts that have been delayed?
Should you ever move your mic, Nick?
So regarding Iron Star, we have a contract in place with them?
Yes.
We do have a contract. And what are the provisions of that contract? When do we become obligated to, or when do we have the opportunity?
Well,
I assume it was before 2028.
Yeah, the original project, I think, was supposed to start delivering energy in 21 or 22, but...
Through what period?
I don't remember off the top of my head how long that contract lasts.
I guess I'm just wondering legally what our obligations are if they don't come through. And then what other projects might be out there. I mean, this is a pretty dynamic kind of thing that's going on in terms of projects and various and sundry kinds. So I wonder if we were able to replace that with something else, what our obligation to Ironstar would be under the contract.
Currently, and I'd have to have Earl review the contract, but currently I believe we would still be obligated to take that energy when the project came online under our current agreement.
And
but
was your
we
question.
Would have to follow up and have that review performed.
Yeah, and we can do that, look at the contract and see what our obligations are to stay in the contract or not. What I think I'm hearing from David is there's the obligations under the contract, but then do you count that energy in the contract where there's not actual energy in the obligations or not? Which is a different question, I think.
Well, I think also what I heard kind of Nick hinting at as well is on the flip side, if they're not delivering, were you also asking like if they're not delivering, if we're...
How we're obligated to remain in a contract that hasn't been fulfilled, I guess, is really...
I mean, that's going to depend on the language of the contract and what the parties agreed to at
right.
the time. I mean, I'm sure when they entered into the contract, there wasn't energy at that point to deliver, and there's
right.
probably some language addressing the starting point, and we just have to look at that language and see,
well,
what,
then I would
see what that is.
There's a terminus to that as well, so that there would be a point where the contract ends. So it'd be interesting to know where that is. If it was to be in place in 21 and ends in 31, that would have an impact on what we might do with other PPAs or whatever.
Exactly. And then there's also likely to be language about terminating the contract and what can trigger that.
Right.
Too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So I think the other question I have on that one is, what are the current consequences for not meeting our current ordinance? I mean, you're talking about, you know, we're not currently meeting it. We don't currently have a mechanism what happens if we're not meeting our current percentages. And so I guess for me, it's kind of like, do you really need that? Because it doesn't have renewable energy, that additional percentage from our, you know, even though it's not online, it's still not real. So I don't want to count something that's not real. I guess that would be my thought.
Or is there do you put something in there that doesn't obligate us to go out and try to replace it, knowing then that we would have double what we need?
I think it would be different if we were closer to 100% than at 20-something percent right now. So I guess maybe that would be the threshold, is how do you build that in?
But we are still within the framework of the coal contracts that we have, too. So those things, that's what you have in mind, I guess, Dave, isn't it, that we have those obligations mm-hmm. until they close or shut down or whatever, and then you're just basically talking about adding. So I guess I would like to know more, have more information about the nature of that contract as to whether or not we seek any other PPAs.
Right, and I could also see some language in the proposed for a potential ordinance that basically tries to set out as best as you can when something's going to be counted and calculated into your, whether you're meeting your renewal obligations or not. Because, of course, before you contract with someone, well, you're not going to count that. You contract with someone and they're about to provide, well, maybe you count that, maybe you don't, if they provide it right away. Certainly if you contract and they're already providing energy, you count that. But if you enter into a contract and then they're supposed to provide it the next year, then it's delayed. Well, then it's delayed another year, and then it's delayed another year. Do you keep counting it every year if you counted it in the first place? Or at some point do you say, this has been delayed too long, we're not going to count that towards, we're still going to pursue the contract, it might be a good thing once it's in place, once the energy's coming in. Maybe we want to keep the contract, but not count it yet into meeting your obligations, which means then you go out and try to find some real energy you can get now to meet your obligations. And how do you spell that out in the ordinance? And we can work on something to try to figure out how to say that, that if it's some kind of significant delay and whatever, however that's defined, wouldn't yet be counted into how well the city is meeting their goals on renewable energy.
I think for my, and this, and we can, I mean, obviously this will come back to us in whatever form it does, but I think for me, the math would get really weird, it'd get kind of murky if we had that we were pursuing, you know, we had a contract, but we had not been delivered the energy on this for a while. And then and then one came off, one came on. I mean, it just seems like it's a murky thing to do. I appreciate and I understand and I feel sympathetic towards the fact that it hasn't come on because the transmission line was not approved. But at the same time, I think this is the intent of what we're supposed to be doing. And if we're not meeting it, I'm not as, I do think we should continue to pursue, especially if we think it's going to be as long of a delay. Now, if it's the sort of thing that it's like, they need to fix something at the plant and it's going to be up, you know what I mean? That's different than they were relying on a large transmission line to be approved across the top of our state, which was very politically strike, you know, so I think like for that one, I wouldn't feel as comfortable because I don't know how long it's going to be before it actually gets bringing us electrons. So it doesn't feel right to count something that's not there yet.
My inclination, I mean, I understand, I actually don't understand all the legalities of that. But I do understand whether or not we're receiving power that is from a renewable source. And so I don't know how interested I would be in this counting something that legally meets the ordinance's intent, but in practical terms does not. Because we are interested in practical outcomes here.
And you know, we did mention it in the last couple of plans that the contract was there, but it hadn't come online yet. And maybe it's something that you put in there as simple as, you know, if you have something like that that's delayed, you don't necessarily go out and try to get a new contract to replace it unless you can cancel the contract. Because we could end up with contracts that we would have obligations to buy much more energy than we would need, which puts us at a big financial risk.
Yeah.
That's
the contracts are just speculative. That's part of the risk of managing it.
So I think it'd be, you know, you've shown like where it should have been, like mm-hmm. where our bar chart should have been shaded in more. I think it would be, when we're looking at this evaluation over a new contract, like with the 3%, which I know is going to come up in a moment, maybe there's also that evaluation of these contracts. Like if it's taking longer, then something should be, some lever should be pulled that you do come back being like, we're going to pursue another one. Namely, because we're probably jumping to the next percentage increase that we need to get to anyway, and we should already be having RFPs out there.
All right, to go on to the next one, one of the deals they had recommended that we change the definition of eligible renewable energy. And so this is our current definition. What we are proposing based on that is to use the state of Missouri's definition, which is right there, to actually substitute a section of the code to include a reference to this section of the state statutes as for definition of what counts.
I've consulted with people much more knowledgeable than me who think that this is a fantastic idea to broaden the definition.
Is this included in the draft that was given to us?
No, the draft just recommends that it says recognized by the federal or state of Missouri definitions, and so what we used was the state definition is what we would propose.
Yeah, Nick.
Well, I have a question about this and that these would be renewable, but I'm wondering about how clean they would all be. Untreated wood, in particular, methane from landfills, which we do now. I don't know what cellulosic agricultural residues are, but there seems to be no distinguishment here. And what we're trying to get to is a reduction of greenhouse gases. If we are seeing these as renewable, and yet they still contribute in a significant way, that's my question about that. And I don't know the answer to that. How impactful these are in that way. So whether or not we'd want to include all of these things in our ordinance, I think I would like to know more about what their greenhouse gas impact is.
My understanding, it doesn't require us to use it. It just broadens the definition and the options.
But it would allow us to use it. So the, not required, but it would
also
allow.
This is also a recommendation from the Water and Light Advisory Board.
Yeah.
And this is what they do.
Sure. And I still have that question. So it would just be nice to have an idea of that. I would think that some of these would be preferable over others in that sense.
Well, yeah, then maybe I would agree that some of them would be preferable over others as far as a clean energy source.
Right.
But whether or not you want to consider it renewable or not, that's, you know, that's where we need the guidance.
Well, and I think that to that point, would that be then answered in your life cycle cost analysis that you're proposing instead of the 3% is thinking about that? That
could definitely be included in it, is to do an analysis of what is the proposed generation source. And, you know, if you have a solar versus a landfill gas, maybe as part of your analysis, you look at the fact that it is still, you know, has emissions associated with it. Maybe you want to go with solar, or maybe because of the cost of landfill gas would be a little bit better option if you still consider it to be a renewable resource.
Well, I think that we, in getting to where we want to get, there may be other things that we want to do that are going to be less than optimal. I guess I still sort of just wonder about each of those and what their impact is in terms of greenhouse gases.
I mean, we could get some more information on that and follow up with you on what each one of those
I don't know that
be.
I'd oppose including all of these. I just think it'd be informed by, it could be, our actual use could be informed by that information.
And then the other change to that section is to change the Climate and Energy and Environment and Energy Commission to the Climate and Environment Commission.
I thought we caught all of these back when we changed the EEC to the CEC.
This one was missed.
Okay.
And then we asked about this earlier, would we allow the use of RECs?
And it seems like it's both the recommendation of Water and Light Advisory Board and the Climate and Environment Commission not to.
Yes, I believe the recommendation is not to allow that.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear from them about their reasoning behind that. I agree with it, but I'd just be curious to know about that.
Philip, I'm going to address that.
I'm Philip Frasica, Chair of the Water and Land Advisory Board. For the question around RECs and why we don't like them, I can say for Water and Light, we typically just see that as like a greenwashing would be a way to frame it, that you're on paper 100% renewable and saying, hey, we got the RECs, but actually we're not. If we're still buying a lot of our power from those coal contracts, we're just saying, hey, we did it, we achieved it, but we thought to actually achieve it and to really be getting those electrons from renewable sources to not allow it. But again, that's up to you all and what you see is best.
Any other guidance from council on that one? I don't feel like there's support for using RECs. It does. I mean, it's just paying money to not even get the energy. Yeah,
I would. The term I use is shopping therapy instead of greenwashing, but that's basically what we're doing. So, no, I agree that we should, in the ordinance, amend the ordinance that renewable energy credits will not be acceptable in meeting our goals.
And that's.
I think it's in the current, isn't it? Oh, I
just assumed. It's not addressed in the ordinance at all at this point, and it's been a topic of conversation, I know, for the last 3 or 4 years. On paper we're doing it, but we're just spending money to get a piece of paper that says we're doing it when we aren't really doing it.
All right.
So if you all agree on that, we'll include that in the revision. So the next one is the one that really gets tough. And this is the recommendation that we, right now our ordinance says we only have to meet these goals to the extent that it's possible to do without increasing rates more than 3% more than they would be if we were getting it from non-renewable sources. Here's where we need some direction from the council as to whether or not you believe this is a good idea. however we do it, we need to keep it something simple that protects the ratepayers. But, you know, we could do an analysis of each new proposed power purchase agreement using life cycle costs and figure out what the rate increase is, similar to what we did with the solar RFPs that we had last year that were going to require a significant rate increase, and assess the risks with each one. And how, you know, would you like us to remove that 3% and put something in the ordinance that reflects this, or leave the 3% in, or do you change it to a different percentage?
Don, his question.
Do we have anything that we can point to specifically that says we didn't pursue this renewable slash or clean energy alternative because it would have exceeded this 3% cap?
Just the most recent RFPs that we did that we brought back to you in a work session that showed that the increase was going to be significantly higher than 3%.
And if you had done a risk assessment, you would have also given the same, I assume you would put the parameters in place that would have the same intent come back to say, yeah, and I don't recommend doing this.
You know, so you could go out with whatever PPA you come up with that's proposed, and then we could do the analysis and come back to council and say, if we approve this contract, it's going to cause us to have a rate increase of whatever it is, 1.5% or 2% when they start delivering energy. And we'd need to keep track cumulative of what all of them are in total. But then you could make that decision. Is a 1% rate increase adjustment, is that reasonable? I mean, the last ones we had, if I remember right, were up around 10 or 12%. That's probably not a reasonable contract.
Yeah, Nick?
Well, this has been part of our conversation all along, just in terms of rates in general, about its impact on rate payers and low-income rate payers in particular. So this says keep a simple metric to protect the rate payers. Do we have an idea of what that metric looks like?
I don't. The 3% is a very simple metric. Doing an analysis of each one on life cycle costs and what the proposed rate increase would be, it gets a little bit more challenging.
But at the same time, it also gives us more information rather than just the, like if you think about the other, I imagine factors that would be in there would be location. So is it in Missouri? You know what I mean? Like those weigh better for us because they're more consistent.
And it provides more flexibility to do things that are reasonable without a rigid barrier at 3%.
Do you have examples from other municipal electric utilities that do these sort of risk assessments on their contracts?
At this time, I do not.
Yeah, Nick.
So is it, am I to understand then you're looking at just providing more flexibility by the elimination of the cap? And is that where the board was on that? Okay.
They're all nodding their head. For those who can't see, they're nodding heads back home.
They're nodding in almost in unison.
It was,
yeah,
nice.
That's great.
Would the factors of the risk assessment be put into the ordinance, or would it just basically list, consider each new life cycle cost proposed? You know, would it just kind of keep it at that level?
I think we would. If we're going to eliminate the 3% and put something in there about doing life cycle costs and risk assessments, that we put that in the ordinance, but we don't go into specific details on every item that's included in it. And if we wanted to do that, my personal thought is it'd be better as some sort of a
policy
resolution or guidance that council provides us, not as a piece of the code.
Okay.
Because then any time you want to change it, you got to go through the whole process of modifying the code, whereas the council can always change their guidance towards us.
Yeah, I think it'd be useful for council to see an example of what that might look like as far as the standard operating procedure for reviewing it for that. But yeah, don't necessarily need to add a 1700 bullet point piece of the ordinance.
That's what my thoughts.
Yeah, Don.
The cost assessment on the previous slide, how would that be similar to or different from, whichever way is easier to answer, than our assessments that we get when we're discussing an across-the-board rate increase? Or would it just be similar and the same thing?
It'd be similar to it, but it would be, really it would be based on what the additional cost of that contract's going to require of our rates.
Okay.
So it's not going to impact, it's not going to have things in it like in the inflation that we've seen that's driven up our costs of doing business and the pay raises we've given staff.
Right.
It's only going to be that little cost of that contract.
So basically then, if we go forward with this, what we would be looking at is annual, semi-annual, whatever, rate increases. And then we would also be seeing ones for each new PPA that we sign that would impact that. Is that correct?
At the time we execute the power purchase agreement, then you would know what the corresponding rate adjustment that would have to be implemented when power starts to be delivered would need to be.
So we could be looking at rate adjustments more than once a year for the consumer. Is that correct?
Yeah, possibly, but I doubt it because I doubt we would be entering into multiple contracts in a year.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, I think that would trigger, I think if that, I imagine that in your assessment review would be my, at least my hope would be that it would be the sort of thing, if we were already about to do a review of the rates anyway, and it was timing with the contract and related to other, like he said, the employee wage increase, the cost of material, you know what I mean? Like more than just
combine the two, and maybe at the time we do the contracts
it
in
helps
conjunction
you review
with
about,
or at the same time.
Correct.
So that if, yeah, maybe just one rate increase at a time.
Yeah.
So
or per year.
For instance, when we had the RFPs that we did last year, you know, one of the responses was for 140 megawatts and delivery in 2027. Well, when we did the financial analysis on it, it said that that would have required an 8.9% rate increase in order to execute that contract. Well, that if we agreed to it, then we wouldn't have to do the rate increase until delivery in 2027. But we would know that that rate increase would be necessary.
So then I think to your, when my point about timing, then one of the factors in the evaluation has to be the current, I mean, obviously would be the current financial status of the utility. And if you are already going to be proposing based on recent, like we just said, other increases that we were going to have to do a wage increase would then negatively affect that contract, I assume. You know, because we just did a rate increase, so you wouldn't.
Right. I'm just.
It would be more than 8.9. is what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I'm just debating on then, you know, would we, and we've talked about it before, separate from this, but a small annual increase rather than every 3 or 4 years, a large increase, but anticipating then that, like you said, if there's one coming 3 years down the road, but we know that it's going to be a larger increase, how do we balance that so that we do what we need to do, but also then take into account individuals that are struggling with their utility bills.
Yeah, so just I imagine that would be part of the analysis and the review that would come to us.
You know, a lot of different ways you could do that. If you knew you were going to have to do an 8% rate increase in order to afford that contract, but it's not going to be delivered in, for 4 years, maybe you incrementally do it. So that it doesn't show up all at once.
Agree.
Different
agreed.
Ways. Of
That's why
it.
I would be advocating for just for the operational side, an annual 1 or 2% increase, whatever it is, rather than 10% every 4 years.
Yes, that would make much more sense. Over long term, historically, it's 1.5% per year for electric.
Yeah, and again,
but so when we don't do it for 3 or 4 years, we end up with a 6% increase.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
So, can I ask really quick then on, I mean, in this kind of topic, it's work session, we kind of go off a little bit. As we're thinking about Sykeston coming off, and is that a slide coming up?
No.
Okay. As we're thinking about Sykeston closing their plant and we're thinking about, okay, if we were to replace, like you said, with renewable, the contracts for that, are we taking into, I assume we're going to start that process soon since they're expected to start talking about this. They're going to be, like you said, close within the next 5 years, if not sooner. So
I don't know what their schedule is, but
yeah.
5 to 10, probably. I know they're talking about building a new power station down there using natural gas.
Right.
With possibly some solar or battery associated with it. You know, we're not obligated on their new plant, but we would have an opportunity if we wanted to get some energy from that. But, you know, we would need to go ahead and start. If we knew a schedule, then we could get PPAs in place to replace that energy with renewables. But we don't have a schedule at this point.
And so I guess to this point, though, if we're thinking about, and it might have a slight increase, are we now looking at that? Then what would that percentage be that we need to replace then with renewable? What would the size of that sort of contract or contracts be most likely? Because it wouldn't be all replaced with one wind farm or one solar farm. And then how does that impact the rate increase? So that might be a good analysis just to kind of help us brainstorm what that could look like so we get ready for it.
Rate increase for something like that would be a lower impact than just going out and getting a contract today, because you would have the reduction in expenses due to Sikeston included in that calculation.
Right. This is why I'm suggesting this exercise would be fun. Okay. What is this slide?
Well, just a couple other things that were in here that I think these recommendations were based on normal growth. They don't include something that we haven't yet seen, such as an energy-intensive customer like a data center. We have had some conversations with some people that were interested in doing a data center. They talked about 100-megawatt load. Well, if all of a sudden we had a customer that came in with a 100-megawatt load and we would need to go obtain that much more renewable energy overnight, that might not be a real good scenario to be in.
So isn't, though, this the same kind of conversation we had about the electric rate? More homes are doing electrification. Like, we're seeing more go that way. So that's kind of where I think when we were talking about, you were concerned over buying too much renewable energy. And I was like, but you're seeing a need for more energy. So to me, it seems like it's a yes and situation. Like, we can continue to add on the renewable energy because we're seeing the demand grow. Or are you saying that even with these two things of increase in EVs and a data center potential, we're seeing flat?
I mean, we're seeing small amounts of load growth with electrification and the EVs. But if we have... What I'm getting at is if we had something like a data center came in that all of a sudden our load changes by 100 megawatts, that's going to cause a reactionary scramble for contracts that may not be warranted, that we need to think about. If we had something like that happen, do we try to implement the acquisition of the additional renewables over time and not try to catch them back up immediately?
Okay, I see. Yeah, Nick.
Well, the data center question is, I think, points to part of what I think the mayor was getting at, in that we're seeing greater in electrification in general, and the data centers are pretty new in terms of their concern. And I know when they go into an area, they essentially look to see if that power they're going to require is going to be available to them when they build, right? So I imagine in some ways they might ask a utility to provide greater power in that case. So it's not, we couldn't have a data center come in here and say, sure, come in, we got plenty, right? It would just require us to up our
well, actually, with what was proposed when they proposed it, it was not doable for us anyway.
Right. And this is just sort of new. We haven't really experienced this. And a lot of it's AI related because of the intensity of what's required in that regard. So This is one of the things that's frustrating to me, is to try to project what's going to happen in the future. I think we can count on greater electrification. To what degree is kind of harder to say, and how much people are going to continue to adopt electric alternatives to, you know, gas, for instance, or whatever. But in other words, I'm not sure how you provide for the unforeseen, that's a difficult one. That's hard to say. And I think any language probably is going to be pretty, while it would be could be helpful, it's going to be pretty vague.
Well, I think my question there was more of, do we have some sort of language in there to try to, or you know, maybe it goes back with recommendations that these things be reevaluated. I mean, they've recommended it that we reevaluate it before 2030, or even earlier as circumstances change because of something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be interested what that looks like. I can't just imagine this in an ordinance form. You know what I mean? Like the percentage of it. Because right now, the way it's written is it's still a percentage of our electricity. And if the percentage of need, you know, the pie gets bigger, then the percentage stays the same of it. But yes, you have to, I guess for that point, you're measuring a year back, right? So you're looking a year back. I think we've not done historically a good job with staying ahead of trying to seek out aggressively the renewable energy contracts or local generation. And so maybe this then spurs us to support more of those solar on municipal operations, or you know what I mean? Like basically what can we do to try to ramp up as much as we do have control over, so that if something like that comes in, we still have our own local, we've tried to stay on top of it rather than being surprised by it.
And you know, we did go out and acquire a contract with Boone Stevens to, which would have really increased our percentage renewable between that and Iron Star, but then that fell through. I mean, they opted out of the contract, which there was a provision in there for that.
Yeah, and I guess maybe that's more of like highlighting that. So I imagine whenever that came to council the first time, it didn't. I'm sure that part of the contract was not highlighted as a risk, whereas now probably would be, right? This next one that comes to us will hopefully have that risk to help us be like, what happens?
If I remember correctly, that was an 18 contract with delivery in 22. Yeah. They just got approval with MISO to interconnect this year. So they're probably not going to deliver any energy until 27. That's still a potential project that we could be an off-taker of. But they're not built yet.
Right. Yeah, Nick.
I think this is one of the things I have a question about, just understanding a little bit better. But under the recommendations, number two, letter C is about better defining the various ownership and contractual means which may be used to source renewable energy, including bilateral energy purchases, actual and virtual power purchase agreements, future independent system operator systems. So, you know, this gets pretty technical, but I don't know. Is that the kind of thing that we need to include in an ordinance, or can it be more generally stated than that?
I think it would be more generally stated and probably not actually included in the ordinance.
Can I request when the ordinance does come back to us originally for council, can you include some of the additional like potential, these policies or the things that we're doing? We talked about the potential of an assessment, not to be included with the ordinance, but just to help us know that
yes,
the thought process is there and is going to be part of the policy. Okay. Yeah, Betsy.
But the recommendation from the Water and Light Board was to include all this?
It reads like.
And if so, I mean, did you guys mean that, or was there a specific reason
back
for that?
Greg, you come. Just take turns. Right. So
Hi,
number
I'm Greg
two.
Greg Coffin, former chair of the Water Light Advisory Board. I think our intent was not necessarily to include all that in. It was just to bring it to the surface to say, this isn't just a PPA. We could actually be buying energy. In other words, there's a lot of uncertainty in the renewable energy market. Things are going to change. And so we need to be flexible as a city. So if, say, something like MISO started selling renewable energy as a commodity, we do that. So it's really just kind of bringing that to the surface. I agree with Dave, probably a general statement, but it's something behind the scenes for them to understand that there's a lot of contractual methodologies that they could use in order to obtain it. It's not always just going to be a PPA or a roof-mounted solar system. There's a lot of options available for the future. So I think that was our really our intent.
Thank you.
Any questions about that?
No, I think that was it.
Cool.
Thank you, Greg. I think what I was kind of like trying to ask about is, yeah, not to have it in the ordinance, but we will be asked, like, right, how do we know that we're meeting the intent of what it is that we talked about? And so knowing what those sort of like, what's the policy resolution, what is the administrative rule, whatever it is that helps guide that, and then that helps keep it consistent for future councils.
Well, I think we probably should bring it all back at once.
Yeah.
Where they're all there, all the pieces.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna go back up here to this section.
Can I ask a quick one? You have in the recommendations, I don't know if you have a slide for it, about the local, like supporting the energy efficiency, renewable energy on city facilities.
Those are recommendations that the Water and Light Advisory Board had in here, and it says, like, you know, we should continue the ongoing effort of energy efficiency to reduce demand and energy in general. We just revised all of our incentive programs, and so we're definitely going to continue to do those sorts of things, and those will be accounted for in our plan.
And remind me, do we have goal for energy efficiency, like reduction, you know what I mean? Like our reduction goals or anything like that?
Yeah, Todd can come up and explain that to you.
Todd McVicker, Utility Services Manager. So there are goals from the last RFP regarding what we're looking at from energy efficiency, and I believe that it's a 17 megawatt reduction in demand over time on that one. With the new programs we've implemented, we're using the first couple years to bring those into place, see how those are going to do, and then use those to evaluate what additional programming we need to look at or changes. And the goal is to do the revision of the programs on a three-year basis so we can always have bringing new technologies in and then also making market adjustments on what our goals are so we can reach that the goal from the IRP for, which, like I say, 17 megawatts.
Todd, is it also your office that manages the community solar program?
Yes.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that and its relationship to this?
With the community solar program, it uses the existing assets that are already on from that standpoint. So the current community solar program is not adding any additional renewables to the renewable ordinance.
But is already counted in it.
But it is already counted because it's already using the existing assets that are already accounted for and the percentages that we have currently from the renewable.
Is there any plans to increase the amount of assets available for community solar?
If we get to the point that we have come through our subscription and get to the point where we have a need for it, we can look at adding more. But again, the current program is using the existing renewable resources that we have, and there's no plans currently at looking at bringing on new renewable resources for community solar.
Are you already, like, you've sold all the subscriptions, or you haven't sold all the subscriptions to community solar?
We have a very, very long way to go before we'll be at that point. We have approximately 50 people subscribed to the program out of 650 available.
Oh, well, I'm gonna start advertising that. Thank you. That's it. Thanks, Todd. 50 out of 650. Okay, thank you. I'm one of them. Sorry, you can go back. Thanks.
Okay, I've gone back to this slide where we had the date changes, and I added an item 6 on there that said to include a goal of achieving a 40% electric retail use by September 21, 2035, which is what came out of the recommendations from the board. Is the council comfortable with that, or?
What is your recommendation?
I have no reason to not agree with the board's recommendation of trying to achieve 40% by 2035. I think it's very doable, particularly if Sykeston's current facility goes offline without putting us in a position where we'd be at financial risk unnecessarily.
I've got Betsy.
Okay.
Betsy, yeah. Okay. I think she said okay, yeah.
I'm sorry?
She said okay.
I was just saying okay.
Yeah. Do we have any idea, like, more specifically regarding what's happening with Sykeston? Because it's just sort of vague. I mean, we discuss this every year, every 6 months.
It's a very, very vague. We have a very difficult time getting any information, and there's no specific dates on anything.
And we have a contract with them until when?
Until the plant, the life of the plant. So our contract with them is in place as long as that current station is generating electricity.
So there is no end to this contract? If they keep it for another 50 years, we have a contract with them for another 50 years?
That's the way I understand it. If they keep the facility they have, which the facility they have is not going to stay alive for another 50 years.
All right. And then, as we are well aware, there's a real push to have 100% renewable energy by 2035, as opposed to the 40%. This only includes electrical, though, right? This does not include wind or any other renewables? Or
it includes,
how can we be quite so far off?
It includes all renewables producing electricity.
Okay. So this is significantly different than what we're being asked to do.
Yes, it is.
And is there any thought as to if there's any way to increase that?
Well, it goes back to...
This is doable, but...
It goes back to what I was talking about earlier with our coal contracts being in place right now, that, you know, they're not all supposed to go out until the 40s.
Okay.
We would be buying a lot of energy that we would have to just sell on the market.
Okay. So when they do go
out...
It
would be a huge financial risk, but as these facilities get older and we see that they are probably going to be taken offline, then that's when we should line up contracts to replace that energy supply.
Okay.
So, but this is, I think this is my one concern then right there. So we know that this one's going to be coming off, and we're not actively pursuing contracts right now.
If we were, well, we're working on RFP right now for solar.
Well, that was the one after we denied the one last year because it was too high and didn't go back out because we're waiting for this to come back.
This would be taking into account Sykeston going out and not putting us at a bad financial position because we had too much energy under contract.
I guess my question is more of all of it's going to go through a life cycle cost, a rate analysis cost. It's all going to come back to us on those things. I think my concern is if we don't put out there, we would want to get as much as we can, as aggressively as we can, within good fiduciary responsibility. We're not actively pursuing it as much as what we're seeing other communities do, and a lot of them are then getting these contracts cheaper and sooner than we are. And I guess that's my concern of, we're going to have to approve them anyway, so it's not like you're going to recommend to us to put us in grave financial, discourse. You're going to tell us we tried, but it didn't go. You know what I mean? So, and right now, we're not getting sued because we're not meeting our renewable energy goals anyway. So, I guess it's more of, I feel like putting out there that we want to aggressively looking for these, especially if, let's say, Sykeston goes out next year. But I'm just saying, we don't know, right? Let's say a tornado comes through the area, I'm thinking, like, these are things that happen. So it just doesn't seem like there's a lot of checks and balances in place to make sure that we are not putting ourselves at financial ruin. And so to be too cautious, it has me concerned that we're going to miss out on opportunities that we're seeing.
Well, we're also running into just the whole grain belt, like we were supposed to have, is it Iron Star that we were mm-hmm. supposed to have up and running? And obviously, we don't.
Yeah,
but it is sort of that fine line between not being financially or fiscally irresponsible, but knowing that it's a 2 to 3 year or 10 year contract.
Ben Stevens is 2018 to 27, probably before they're generating, so nine year process.
Yeah. So I guess that's sort of that same thing. Are we that we need to be aggressively pursuing this without being too aggressively pursuing it? I'm not sure how to balance that.
Right,
or if there is a way to balance it.
Right. Nick and then Don.
So we're talking about making this change within the ordinance to go to 40% by 2035.
Yes.
So I guess I'm wondering about how obligated we become to that as a because I think the goal itself might be higher than that. And part of what I have in mind here is that under 7 from the advisory board, that future incremental goals shall be flexible and adjustable to reflect contractual, market, and availability conditions outside the control of city utility staff. So I wonder how that, if that sounds good to me. So I wonder how that comports with placing a 40% by 2031 in the ordinance. Does that question make sense? Got one nod over there.
Yeah, you're asking. What you're saying is that
how does your recommendation comport with that?
Yeah, so there's a lot of uncertainty in the market right now. Right. I mean, we've talked a lot about the projects having uncertainty, but also looking at MISO, looking at our regional transmission organization that we're operating under. If you look at the auction pricing for energy for this period for the winter months, it is very concerning and seeing some of the shocks and price jumps just for our region. So it's just us and Ameren are the main contributors to that. So it's kind of outside of our control. So we're really going with a pragmatic goal here that we saw as something that was easily achievable, that we could hit in an affordable time frame and an affordable rate. So just to your questions on the life of plant, based on the TA's scenario 5 and their analysis, if we had all of our life of plant contracts end by, say, 2043, we could hit 100% that year, and it would be affordable. That showed a 15% increase, if that. So some of that, we can really zoom up to a higher goal at a higher threshold at a very short term, but this is reflective of what we're currently seeing and that level of uncertainty. And we felt comfortable that if we had something that was a less aggressive goal, that this would definitely be achievable. And we also kept in mind of having those difficulties of that we've already been struggling with some of reaching some of these goals and those timeframes. So we wanted to really just take all of that into consideration. But I personally think we could exceed that in that time frame. It just, again, there's a lot and 3 coal contracts that we can't really say or really have a lot of control on when those end.
Philip, can I ask, did the board suggest any additional language to add that gives the encouragement to exceed the, you know what I mean? Like, how would that look like in this? Like, as opportunities are brought, you know what I mean? Like, something like what would pull that lever?
Yeah, and that's just where we had the last one, complete another review of the renewable energy ordinance goals by fiscal year 2030 and or earlier if circumstances change. So if we see things shift drastically the other way, that you should look at it, you know, by 2030 or sooner to say, hey, actually we were, you know, a little too conservative with this goal and we can actually go higher than this in a shorter time period.
Is there ordinance proposed language or just that?
It's just our recommendation for you all to add to an ordinance, yes.
Well, you could have the recommendation and then you could have a goal.
We could. And we can draft something up to include in the ordinance that would address that.
I think it would, because we just don't want to miss out on, I don't want to just be like, well done us, and then have like Springfield, Missouri surpass us, though they're on the south, so I know they already have a lot more opportunities for renewable in their grid. Never mind. Bad example.
Well, yeah, the Boone Stevens project's still moving forward, and I see that as a really good opportunity for us to make some headway, but it doesn't have to be included necessarily in here. That's connecting to our system. That'd be renewable energy that we would actually use.
Be local.
Not yet.
Yeah, done.
I'm assuming you're talking about the current, the existing coal PPAs that we have, that there would be a financial penalty to us if we terminated those early. Is that correct?
I don't know that there's a provision in there for termination plant's no longer
so,
in service.
Yeah, if there's not a termination, then we can't. So, and then, okay, so when they cycle offline, you'll be obviously the RFP, PPAs, and those would have to be approved by council, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So that's how we can monitor whether we're making progress, is as new PPAs come in for replacing the energy for the offgoing coal plants that they're green.
Well.
But there's, how can we hurry them up?
Oh, no, I was just meaning more of the conversation is around For those, for the plants that you're talking about, like the non-Sykeston ones.
Right, but no, it goes back to exactly what we're talking about, the 40% by 2035, okay? If those coal plants don't cycle offline prior to that, we may not be there, just simply because, and it goes back to circumstances beyond our control. Okay, so how do we adjust that? Yes, and maybe they all cycle off by 2030, in which case then we may be well above 40%. Okay, so again, that's circumstances we can't control, you know, at our end.
So you can, we could sell the excess energy for that we get from them on the, I mean, that is an option to do as well.
Yeah.
Those other plants have life of plants 2070, I mean.
40.
The IATSM?
Prairie State's supposed to go offline in the 40s.
And what about?
Illinois passed laws that all their facilities have to be offline.
Okay.
And IATSM is included in that with TEA's study because that's when they projected us getting to 100% renewable.
Was when those go off.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was just meaning more of that, to go back to the one of our first conversations with, or the tonight or this afternoon. Sorry, I keep, it's still daylight. I see the daylight. I can say this. When it talks about, like, we have extra. Right? Like if we have extra, you do have the potential to sell off. I think it's more of like, how do you do that consideration at that time?
We do, but yeah, and I know, and I remember what he said. That's, you know, that's, yeah, are we going to make money or is it going to be garage sale?
Nickels, stickers. So your question is whether or not, I think I'd be interested in what additional bullet point we could add to this that gets to the intent of aggressive, you know, how to aggressively still continue to pursue to increase the percentage, especially in light of.
We can draft something on that and share it and get feedback before we bring something back.
Yeah, Nick.
I think what I really want utility to have is the greatest flexibility possible to introduce new renewable sources as soon as that can happen. And it is a changing market. It's very active. We don't know what's going to happen, and the opportunities may come. So I hear what you're saying is that we don't want to miss out on the opportunities when they come, and they may come before we're ready. So that's kind of what I'm looking for, is just the greatest flexibility we can have to move as quickly as we can in that direction. And I think part of this is going to mean just really keeping an eye on the markets and our contracts and all of that kind of stuff in an ongoing basis. And that puts a burden, I think, on the Water and Light Advisory Board as well in that regard, because I think that's part of what you all are looking at as well, right?
Oh, come up, Greg. Wait till you get to the microphone.
I could walk and talk sometimes at the same time. Not chew gum, though. Mm. We had put a comment in there in our recommendations, and is that the city may wish to consider stating a long-term clean energy vision, for the community versus a specific goal. Yeah. We put a specific goal that we felt is pragmatic, it's achievable. We'd like to do more, but we recognize we have this huge uncertainty, not only in the assets that we've contracted now, but also what's the market going to do? If anybody can predict that, let me know, because I want to invest, because it could be a winner. So I think one of the things you may want to do as a community is, one, set a specific goal, a target for the utility to go for, but also say, as a community, by this date, this is where we want to be. That's a goal, a vision, versus a target that the utility has to drive towards. So that's kind of what we were thinking when we put this together. So that would be something that council may look at. As a community, this is what we would like to do.
That speaks to what I'm talking about.
And that's what we
here.
Put in one of our recommendations. We didn't capture that, but it's in your notes for the recommendations.
Yeah, the ordinance has more, we're more tied to whatever we put in the ordinance, but so that doesn't sound like a goal there. But the goal really should, we should have a goal that's more challenging.
Yeah, I look at those as targets, not specific goals. I mean, you set a target because you have to have something you can drive towards. And it's literally the mechanism to get you towards a long-term vision. And that's, you know, really we don't have a vision. Maybe we do that with the climate action plans, but we don't really have it so much with the energy side. And to emphasize again what Philip said is, We wanted to make sure that the plan is not just put on the shelf, the electronic shelf, the ordinance, is that it's renewed, it's looked at every few years, at least by 2030 again, because things are going to change. Circumstances are going to change, opportunities are going to open up, and we may want to revise it again, but it should be looked at a little more frequently than, you know, than we've had in the past.
Well, so then clarification. So Greg, we get an annual renewable energy plan. Wouldn't that be the time that we should be?
Yeah, I think you're looking at that. You're looking to try to achieve those targets. But again, the plan, the targets might need to be readjusted based on the circumstances, but those are going to change, maybe not every year, but every few years, something's going to happen. You know, we'll, you know, maybe in a year or two, we'll know what Sikeston's going to do. Right now, it's still their vision, their plan, but it hasn't been firmed up yet. Once it's firmed up, then that gives the city utilities the task to go forth with, okay, now what are we going to do to replace not only the energy from Sikeston, but the capacity as well.
And I would say, I mean, you can sit down.
Are you fine?
You can sit, or you can stand. You can keep it hanging out there too, Greg. I would say that we actually do have a vision out there. Like the Climate Action Adaptation Plan does have the vision for 100%, and it has in it the actions of how one is to get as much municipal electric as to be renewable energy.
What it could do, you could tie it with this. You could basically put a long-term vision. Here's our specific short-term targets, but here's our long-range plan.
Maybe adding the long-term vision to this ordinance for that, because then the cap then has some of the other ways to get it, which is reducing demand, local demand, increasing, you know, the things that are not just water and light's responsibility, but us as a community's.
Correct.
We need to review the cap?
Well, the cap is doing a review right now. Eric is okay. Shaking his head. They're doing a review right now and should be coming back to us with an update in 25, I imagine. That is next year. All right. Thank you, Greg. So when this comes back to us, it will have more of a maybe pulling from the cap, the long vision of this, and then with these targets and the additional kind of like background policy that's the aggressive seeking for renewable as we can get.
Yes.
And? What else do we need to discuss on this?
Nothing for me.
Any other council?
I think I know what we need to do and come back to council with some changes.
Okay. Do you think that this will be the probably one of our meetings in January? What's the timing on this? I'm sorry. Chris.
We got one more meeting in December than we are in January. There's no way we can put this together in 2 weeks.
Okay. No, I didn't expect it to come back December 16th. You have to turn those in yesterday.
Last week.
Today.
I'm just getting at it in January. I mean, to get the deadline on there, we have to turn that in.
Yeah.
December 19th.
Yeah.
We can't get that turnaround, so it'd be February or March at best.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Nick.
I just want to underline again that the City of Columbia Water and Light has generous programs for the installation of solar, for instance, and other things that are that reduce power usage. And I just encourage, there are a lot of advocates in the room and they know this, but this is something that I hope more people in the community can come to learn about what they can do in their own homes as they're able to reduce use and also to potentially contribute to the grid itself.
Lisa.
I'm appreciative of the time and the detailed work from the Water and Light Advisory Board and the dedication required. I've attended one or two of your meetings, and they're intense, and you do a lot of great work. One question that I have is regarding, it's related but not related to this meeting, but the electric grid. When are we going to bring that back on the table for discussion? We had the work session, and then we didn't do anything with the information. Are we going to bring that back
I believe
soon?
We asked staff to do the cost analysis, and I believe that's what they're working on right now.
Yeah, I've talked to a consultant, and I need to set a follow-up meeting with them to find out exactly what it would cost for the whole scope to get the updated cost estimates for that, so we can have that information you requested to talk about again.
They were like 2018 numbers.
So are we, do you have an, just an general idea? I'm a timeline person. Are we talking about like February of next year? Are we talking, what, Carlin, could you help with that?
It's more probably, I would say, summertime.
Yeah.
Just because of the, just the, like the mayor said, the last time we looked at those numbers, it was 2018. We're now at 2024. No, the cost of everything has gone up. So to get a real decent amount, a decent number to actually be able to talk about and to really have something that we can actually discuss, it's going to take a little time for the contractor to actually pull that back in.
Would it be unreasonable to think maybe March? I mean, I feel like we've talked about it so much.
But talking
that's
about
not
it,
enough time to actually get that work done, to get a contract in place, and then to get the work done could not be achievable in March.
Okay, that seems long to me, but I'm hearing that I'm not right about that. Okay.
So we'll be able to give you a closer number of a date certain, and so let us go back and kind of get that up.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Because can you just explain, I mean, do you have to put out an RFP, or what do you have to
we
do?
We don't have to
get
put out an
updated
RFP. We have to, we have a approved consultants list, so we can use the consultants off of that list, and if the charges are less than, I don't remember off the top of my head the number, $250,000, a city manager can approve a contract, but the scope of the contract still has to be developed and the cost negotiated. When we get the contract approved, then the work can start. And I don't know how long it's going to take them to do that work, but I know they can't do that work in 4 weeks.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
I have, so related to this, like I'm assuming that we'll have, you might follow up with us if you have any additional questions or clarifying on this. But appreciate, yes, Water and Light Advisory Board, their early morning meetings, their stretch for long hours doing this. Also appreciate all the community members who have been contacting us, letting us know of their interest in going around, and also the research that's been going into that. It's really appreciated. Also from our peers, talking to other cities that are going through something similar is very useful when they're looking at other municipal electric utilities, how they're doing the programs for meeting this. I have some another thing not related to this. Is yours related to this?
Yeah, it is. And I just want to thank the, because it may be the last opportunity we have, to thank the Climate and Environment Commission for their work. Last opportunity because we're changing their name, it looks like.
So. No, we're not changing their name.
We're not changing their name?
No, we're updating the ordinance with their correct name.
They're correct. So this is their correct name?
This is their correct name.
Oh, well, never mind. But thanks to you guys anyway, in whatever regard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a couple of other housekeeping things. Is there anything else related to this topic that we want to go over? Yeah, done.
A couple of things. So the Water and Light Advisory Board had a long list of recommendations. Are we going to try to incorporate most of those or just what we talked about today?
Just what we talked about today is what I was planning on putting in the code. If some of these others we could put into some of those policy guidelines that would accompany them.
Okay, because I did have one specific question, and that would be 3E. City should develop a plan to convert the electricity loads for city-owned buildings, excluding water and sewer plants, to 100% net renewable by 2035 or earlier. And just a general question, and maybe it's too far into the weeds for today, but how would that be measured or determined? Would it just be like an offset that this is what city buildings are using, and this is how much, you know, renewable is coming in. You know, how would we determine, you know, if that's something that's adopted? I guess would probably be the first question. If we're going to adopt that, and if we are, then how would we evaluate whether or not we've achieved that?
I think that's yet to be determined. But I mean, if you had a city building and you put solar panels on it that were sufficient to provide the energy for their entire load, then that would be one way to measure.
That would be
it,
one.
Instance.
Okay. All right.
Just an example that I was not going to put in the code.
Right. Okay. So,
and then I also
clarify on that one. So we get the municipal building benchmarking report from mm-hmm. sustainability, and in that, I think that would be the mechanism where we could measure to see how we're meeting that that goal? Because it is one of the goals in the Climate Action Adaptation Plan. So maybe that's a way for your point of, like, how do we check to say we're on it?
Yeah, okay, how do we get there? The other question, and I think it kind of goes back to the definition of renewable that was proposed earlier, is given, and I think the sentiment behind what the city's trying to do, do we want to differentiate renewable? I think most of us had the conception solar and wind. And yet, technically, the definition that in the Missouri statutes, biodiesel is renewable, landfill methane is renewable, but that doesn't meet what the city wants to do as far as fewer emissions. Mm-hmm. So do we want to try to maybe say an emphasis on clean energy versus simply renewable?
I think that emphasis on clean energy would be part of your assessment of each individual PPA, and if you have two PPAs and one of them has no emissions and the other one has a lot of emissions.
Right, and you would include that in your submissions to us.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah.
And then just as a clarification, we actually do allow the capture of methane for the turbines at the landfill. I mean, right, that's...
Yes, correct.
We do count that as renewable.
But there was a very long list, and if you look at it, they're all legitimately renewable.
Yeah.
And then we also have the landfill gas from Jeff City that's part of our current portfolio.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else on this topic? Okay. I just have a couple of housekeeping things. One is related to utilities, actually, Dave, so you can stay there. I was recently at a food bank event, and we had been in talks with them about potentially shopping carts that went to the landfill that maybe if they're about to be thrown away that they could clean and use because their shopping carts are going. But it sounds like maybe that's not going forward.
We don't collect shopping carts. And shopping carts that come to the landfill, if they were put into a garbage truck, are mangled.
Okay.
And if somebody else has picked them up and brought them in, nobody ever comes up and say, here's a shopping cart. So I've been looking at, I've asked for a report from the contact center to see how many calls do we get about abandoned shopping carts in the street right away, and to see if that may be a method to do it, because a lot of times if you actually call the owner of the cart, they'll say, I do not want it back.
Right, and the food bank said, we'll take it.
If the owner doesn't want it back, then if we call them and they go pick it up, why would that be a problem?
And that may be more of a conversation for parks and the street department.
Okay.
I think there was a time when we cleaned up one camp where we received a lot of shopping carts, and that was from, I believe that was from Target, and they said they didn't want any of those back, so those did go to the landfill.
Okay.
But I think as we look at parks and streets, there may be an opportunity to have some.
Yeah, because I think they were saying they're down like 40% or something of their shopping carts.
The carts on that particular site were all on TKG's property, and store did not want them back, and they got mangled and put in dumpsters.
We can look forward as opposed to
just trying to divert them from the landfill and also help out one of our nonprofits.
Yeah, so.
And
it would be great if everybody did the Aldi's grocery cart, 25 cent.
Or the
they
Gerb.
Just seem to do
the
Gerbs
has a geolock on their
well, and I know the food bank has written a grant to get those geolocking for their things. The other one is a housekeeping. We have five additional applicants for the Citizens Police Review Board, and so we talked about doing interviews. So the question is whether or not council would be okay starting the December 16th or the January 6th meeting at 4 p.m. Instead of 5 for our pre-council to do interviews. Is there 16? Is that okay if we do that on the 16th?
That's fine with me.
I'm
on
okay
the 16th.
With it.
Yep, acceptable.
Okay, does that work for you? 16th December. Work? Okay. I see Sheila. So Sheila is aware of this. So what we'll do is we'll start our pre-council at 4, and then the interviews will start at 6, so that way community members have time to get in for the interviews. So we'll do them last. That works. Anything else for the good of the group? No? Appreciate this. Appreciate the time during the day. It's appreciated. Time for you. All right, well, go ahead and adjourn our council.